There was a metallic clash, and Howl appeared again, stumbling slightly in the middle of the large sheet of rusty iron Sophie had been going to move next. "Not here either," he said. "You are a terror, aren't you? Leave this yard alone. I know just where everything is in it, and I won't be able to find the things I need for my transport spells if you tidy them up." So there was probably a bundle of souls or a box of chewed hearts somewhere out here, Sophie thought. She felt really thwarted. "Tidying up is what I'm here for," she shouted at Howl. "Then you must think of a new meaning for your life," Howl said. For a moment it seemed as if he was going to lose his temper too. His strange pale eyes all but glared at Sophie. But he controlled himself and said, "Now trot along indoors, you overactive old thing, and find something else to play with before I get angry. I hate getting angry." Sophie folded her skinny arms. She did not like being glared at by eyes like glass marbles. "Of course you hate getting angry," she retorted. "You don't like anything unpleasant, do you? You're a slitherer outer. That's what you are. You slither away from anything you don't like." Howl gave a forced sort of smile. "Well, now," he said. "Now we both know each other's faults. Now go back into the house. Go on. Back." He advanced on Sophie, waving her toward the door. The sleeve on his waving arm caught the edge of the rusty metal, jerked and tore. "Damnation," said Howl, holding up the trailing blue and silver ends. "Look what you've made me do." "I can mend it," Sophie said. Howl gave her another glassy look. "There you go again," he said. "How you must love servitude." He took his torn sleeve gently between the fingers of his right hand and pulled it through them. As the blue and silver fabric left his fingers, there was no tear in it at all. "There," he said. "Understand?" Sophie hobbled back indoors, rather chastened. Wizards clearly had no need to work in the ordinary way. Howl had shown her he really was a wizard to be reckoned with. "Why didn't he turn me out?" she said, half to herself and half to Michael. "It beats me," said Michael. "But I think he goes by Calcifer. Most people who come in here either don't notice Calcifer, or they're scared stiff of him." Chapter 6, in which Howl expresses his feelings with green slime. Howl did not go out that day, nor for the next few days. Sophie sat quietly in the chair by the hearth, keeping out of his way and thinking. She saw that, much as Howl deserved it, she had been taking out her feelings on the castle when she was really angry with the Witch of the Waste. And she was a little upset at the thought that she was here on false pretenses. Howl might think Calcifer liked her, but Sophie knew Calcifer had simply seized on the chance to make a bargain with her. Sophie rather thought she'd let Calcifer down. This state of mind did not last. Sophie discovered a pile of Michael's clothes that needed mending. She fetched out thimble, scissors, and thread from her sewing pocket and set to work. By that evening, she was cheerful enough to join in Calcifer's silly little song about saucepans. "Happy in your work?" Howl said sarcastically. "I need more to do," Sophie said. "My old suit needs mending, if you have to feel busy," said Howl. This seemed to mean that Howl was no longer annoyed. Sophie was relieved. She had been almost frightened that morning. It was clear Howl had not yet caught the girl he was after. Sophie listened to Michael asking rather obvious questions about it, and Howl slithering neatly out of answering any of them. "He is a slitherer outer," Sophie murmured to a pair of Michael's socks. "Can't face his own wickedness. She watched Hal being restlessly busy in order to hide his discontent. That was something Sophie understood rather well. At the bench, Hal worked a good deal harder and faster than Michael, putting spells together in an expert but slapdash way. From the look on Michael's face, most of the spells were both unusual and hard to do. But Hal would leave a spell midway and dash up to his bedroom to look after something hidden and no doubt sinister going on up there, and then shortly race out into the yard to tinker with a large spell out there. Sophie opened the door a crack and was rather amazed to see the elegant wizard kneeling in the mud with his long sleeves tied together behind his neck to keep them out of the way, while he carefully heaved a tangle of greasy metal into a special framework of some kind. That spell was for the king. Another overdressed and scented messenger arrived with a letter and a long, long speech, in which he wondered if Hal could possibly spare time, no doubt valuably employed in other ways, to bend his powerful and ingenious mind to a small problem experienced by His Royal Majesty, to wit, how an army might get its heavy wagons through marsh and rough ground. Hal was wonderfully polite and long-winded in reply. He said no, but the messenger spoke for a further half hour, at the end of which he and Hal bowed to one another, and Hal agreed to do the spell. "This is a bit ominous," Hal said to Michael when the messenger had gone. "What did Solomon have to get himself lost in the waste for? The king seems to think I'll do instead." "He wasn't as inventive as you, by all accounts," Michael said. "I'm too patient and too polite," Hal said gloomily. "I should have overcharged him even more." Hal was equally patient and polite with customers from Porthaven. But, as Michael anxiously pointed out, the trouble was that Hal did not charge these people enough. This was after Hal had listened for an hour to the reasons why a seaman's wife could not pay him a penny yet, and then promised a sea captain a wind spell for almost nothing. Hal eluded Michael's arguments by giving him a magic lesson. Sophie sewed buttons on Michael's shirts and listened to Hal going through a spell with Michael. "I know I'm slapdash," he was saying, "but there's no need for you to copy me. Always read it right through, carefully first. The shape of it should tell you a lot, whether it's self-fulfilling or self-discovering, or simple incantation, or mixed action and speech. When you've decided that, go through again and decide which bits mean what they say and which bits are put as a puzzle. You're getting on to the more powerful kinds now. You'll find every spell of power has at least one deliberate mistake or mystery in it to prevent accidents. You have to spot those. Now take this spell." Listening to Michael's halting replies to Hal's questions and watching Hal scribble remarks on the paper with a strange, everlasting quill pen, Sophie realized that she could learn a lot too. It dawned on her that if Martha could discover the spell to swap herself and Letty about at Mrs. Fairfax's, then she ought to be able to do the same here. With a bit of luck, there might be no need to rely on Culcifer. When Hal was satisfied that Michael had forgotten all about how much or little he charged people in Porthaven, he took him out into the yard to help with the king's spell. Sophie creaked to her feet and hobbled to the bench. The spell was clear enough, but Hal's scrawled remarks defeated her. "I've never seen such writing," she grumbled to the human skull. "Does he use a pen or a poker?" She sorted eagerly through every scrap of paper on the bench and examined the powders and liquids in the crooked jars. "Yes. Let's admit it," she told the skull. "I snoop, and I have my proper reward. I can find out how to cure foul pest and abate whooping cough, raise a wind and remove hairs from the face. If Martha had found this lot, she'd still be at Mrs. Fairfax's. Howell, it seemed to Sophie, went and examined all the things she had moved when he came in from the yard, but that seemed to be only restlessness. He seemed not to know what to do with himself after that. Sophie heard him roving up and down during the night. He was only an hour in the bathroom the next morning. He seemed not to be able to contain himself, while Michael put on his best plum velvet suit, ready to go to the palace in Kingsbury, and the two of them wrapped the bulky spell up in golden paper. The spell must have been surprisingly light for its size. Michael could carry it on his own easily with both his arms wrapped round it. Hal turned the knob over the door red down for him and sent him out into the street among the painted houses. "They're expecting it," Hal said. "You should only have to wait most of the morning. Tell them a child could work it. Show them. And when you come back, I'll have a spell of power for you to get to work on. So long." He shut the door and roved round the room again. "My feet itch," he said suddenly. "I'm going for a walk on the hills. Tell Michael the spell I promised him is on the bench, and here's for you to keep busy with." Sophie found a grey and scarlet suit, as fancy as the blue and silver one, dropped into her lap from nowhere. Hal, meanwhile, picked up his guitar from its corner, turned the doorknob green down, and stepped out among the scudding heather above Market Chipping. "His feet itch," grumbled Culcifer. There was a fog down in Porthaven. Culcifer was low among his logs, moving uneasily this way and that to avoid drips in the chimney. "How does he think I feel, stuck in a damp grate like this?" "Then you'll have to give me a hint at least about how to break your contract," Sophie said, shaking out the grey and scarlet suit. "Goodness, you're a fine suit, even if you are a bit worn. Built to pull in the girls, aren't you?" "I have given you a hint," Culcifer fizzed. "Then you'll have to give it me again. I didn't catch it," Sophie said, as she laid the suit down and hobbled to the door. "If I give you a hint and tell you it's a hint, it will be information, and I'm not allowed to give that," Calcifer said. "Where are you going?" "To do something I didn't dare do until they were both out," Sophie said. She twisted the square knob over the door until the black blob pointed downward. Then she opened the door.